Hello, I'm Lee Hatcher with the Growth Coaching International Case Study podcast series. Some great stories of the difference that GCI is making in all sorts of schools and school systems. I'm in conversation with Richard Gota, Director of Staff Development at Hale School at Wembley Downs in northwest Perth, Western Australia. Richard is an accredited GCI coach with a career that's included teaching, pastoral care, sports coaching, outdoor education, staff development, change management, and academia. He's undertaking PhD studies in leadership development at the University of Western Australia. Richard spoke with us via Skype.
So the school was established in 1858 by Bishop Hale. It was located in the centre of Perth CBD. Over time, it was moved to an area near King's Park called Havelock Street, and then in 1961, they moved the school out to Wembley Downs, and at that time it was just bush and sand. It was quite a visionary leadership initiative, and over time the school's just developed and grown from there. And now, of course, we're surrounded by suburbs, and the school's just taken its own history from that relocation in 1961.
Your school has a teaching staff of 138, 1,300 students. How would you describe the ethos, the character of the school, Richard?
From a perspective of the boys, what we hope to achieve is to provide them with an opportunity to excel at whatever level that is for each individual. So we try to encourage the boys to be the best that they can possibly be. The other thing, we try to encourage them to think outside the box, to think more about we rather than I, and to be part of a bigger global society. And to realise that with the privilege of coming to a school like this and with the privilege of a lot of their backgrounds, they also have a responsibility. And one of the key facets and platforms for enabling that to happen has been the service learning program, which I think has had a significant impact on the school's culture.
I just flesh out that point about the focus on the we rather than the I. That is flying in the face of so much of what makes up a relationship's character, the way we are in our world today, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, most of the vehicles that are available to anybody, whether it be a young teenage boy, a young teenage girl, or an adult, most of the vehicles nowadays are focused on I'm promoting myself, whether it be on Facebook. I'm promoting my ideals, my beliefs. And the issue of connectivity in a global perspective is becoming less and less prevalent.
Yes.
And we're seeing that in global politics at the moment, and we're seeing that in our own regional areas as well.
Can you describe to us the kind of staff you have, especially how they develop professionally, personally, in Hale School?
Yeah, well, I think the staff group overall are collegial, they're caring, they're networked. We have lunch all together in the dining hall, which breaks down, you know, the possibility of the silos of departments.
Yes.
And allows people to have conversations with others that they perhaps might not see on a normal daily basis. I think we're always trying to do our best to have a whole school interconnected staff community, and that's always challenging when we've got the junior school located away from the senior school and middle school, and the middle school slightly located away from the senior school. I hope that staff see that their growth and their development is fundamental to how we want to invest in them. And I hope they see that that's about their growth rather than about evaluating them. Those two things are very, very different.
Richard, can I ask you what sparked your interest in introducing a coaching intervention to your particular context at Hale, especially the solutions-focused approach?
It was all a chance opportunity, really. It was not planned. I hadn't come into the process thinking that coaching was something I was going to move forward with. A friend of mine who received some performance feedback, one of the suggestions was that he take up the opportunity to do some coaching. And while I was literally in his room at that time, and I thought, oh, that sounds really interesting. I'd like to be part of that. So we both went along, and there I was sitting in the room absorbing what Grant had to say and listening to the growth coaching model. And from that point onwards, I was very much of a fan of what they were doing, but also believed that it had so much to offer in terms of working in highly complex school environments. In terms of their training process, that was quite extensive. You had a lot of opportunity to work with other colleagues from different schools, and that was invaluable. And over time, they allow you to become versed in the growth metaphor, but then they actually encourage you to deconstruct that and not do it in a sort of laddered approach. And then after that, we started learning different frameworks, and solution-focused was one of those frameworks, and it really resonated with me even more than the growth coaching steps and pillars, if you like.
Why did it resonate with you? What's so special in your mind about solutions-focused?
On the surface, solution-focused coaching is easy, but what underlies it is a mental model that for many people in Western society is very, very challenging. It's not just simply about and simply making steps towards your best hope. It's also about understanding where you are and what your strengths are, what you bring to the table, and they refer to these as chips in the solution-focused model. And it's looking at just a couple of little incremental steps, nothing big, and it's continuing that narrative about that progress. And the thing that I've found over time is that as people engage in that process, all sorts of other things happen in terms of their growth and development that weren't planned. So they take that metaphor into other places, they take that strength into other places, and they do some things that certainly weren't in the narrative, weren't in the conversation when we're sitting down together.
Yeah. So more overarching, what in particular attracted you to the GCI model of coaching, Richard?
Well, when I initially did it, I was... You know, Grant's pretty charismatic and engaging, and he brought to the table lots of other information about teams, organisations. Grant's one of the senior managers in the Growth Coaching International. He's been involved from the grassroots, if you like. I guess it's going back 15 years now. And he was one of the people, certainly in Western Australia, who started to introduce that concept into schools. In a similar way to solution-focused coaching, on the surface it's easy, and you could track through the ladders of development of the coaching conversation on a superficial level. But underneath that, there is a requirement for the participants to be doing lots of different things, deep listening, emotional engagement, developing trust. All of those things allow coaching to be a very powerful tool. And it also allows it to be practical and attainable.
Yes.
It's about being open and listening intently, being engaged, being connected, and allowing that person to think and discuss and feel what's important for them and how they want to engage moving forward.
You're listening to the Growth Coaching International Case Study podcast series. I'm in conversation with Richard Gota from Hale School in Perth. So Richard says this coaching model is practical and attainable. So what's it meant in practice to both students and staff?
I'll start with the students. Coaching has an impact on a staff culture. So it has an impact on people's vitality, the learning that they can undertake in an organisation with colleagues, their level of commitment. And it allows them together to have greater sort of reciprocity with one another and stronger relational dynamics. And I think that's the key. A lot of research, a lot of work at ATSL and other places looks at the school leader and it looks at the teacher, but the bit in the middle, which is where the teams are operating, coaching allows learning organisations and learning groups to develop, and from that strength, it then has an impact on boys. So that's the first thing. The second thing about boys is you can use solution-focused frameworks and coaching frameworks directly with students. And one of the stories or the narrative that I remember acutely is one boy who was literally halfway out the door from having to leave the school. And I was asked to sit with him and try and work through some issues. And all I did was use the solution-based framework. And that caused a whole array of other positive parallel activities and behaviours for him. So the best hope for him was something to do around getting his locker organised and himself organised within the boarding house. We talked about a couple of steps moving towards that best hope and some of the skills he had shown at home on the farm that enabled him to be organised and tidy. And he got such a sense of success from sorting that out and sorting himself out in the boarding house that he decided to make a couple of other steps into a few subject areas that he enjoyed. So he spent some time trying to organise his files and be organised when he walked into those classes the next time round. And I had those teachers come to me a week or so later and query me about, you know, what had I done in terms of presenting some sort of discipline framework around making this boy engage in those subjects in that way. And I had no discipline framework at all. All we talked about was what that best hope was. And then a few years later, he graduated and both his mum and grandmum were in my office with Gay, who's the lady I worked with at that stage. And they were all in tears about the fact that he'd made it through and succeeded in this school system and had a good platform for moving ahead. So that was one little sort of vignette, and I've used solution-focused and growth coaching frameworks for other boys in other situations.
I love hearing the impact of that kind of thing. So practical.
In regard to the staff, there's so much around our sort of Western culture in terms of challenges for us as communities, as professional communities. And one of the biggest challenges when I'm sitting down with staff members is to readjust their lens. And staff get two boxes when they get feedback. One of those boxes is a box full of affirmation, and another box is a box where there's some critique. And I've literally had one lovely girl, 26 pages of glowing affirmation, and on the last page, on the 27th page, there were two lines that critiqued some of her practice, and they were the only two lines that she focused on. So changing that perspective and looking at the box of affirmation, which is usually three or four or five times larger than the box which contains a critique, is a real challenge. But that's the start of that coaching process, to get a solution-focused mindset and framework. The more recent example, I've been coaching a bloke here called Steve, and he's looked at a very specific aspect of what he wants to develop. It's slightly outside the classroom, but I've had colleagues of his come to see me and say, wow, he's got a second wind. He is really enthusiastic. He's really engaged. What he's done has really inspired him to not only excel in that area, but also excel in other areas. And again, it's similar to an example I gave before with a student, that those coaching frameworks, they have sort of developed parallel lives which weren't discussed and weren't focused on in that narrative at that time, but have allowed people to develop in different ways.
What an impact. How are you sustaining this in the school? How would you say you're sustaining this model and the benefits of it, Richard?
The model we've put together over a number of years, and we've done it slowly, and we've been very careful about the change management process. I think one of the key things is we involved staff earlier on, particularly some departments which people knew well and had a very popular head of department in the history department. We asked them to be sort of crash test dummies, if you like, over time. And then I asked Craig to actually just stand up in front of the whole staff group and say, what was it like? What happened there? Did it work? And without any prompting, he said yes, gave a great expose of the experience that he'd had as a result of the formative process. That's been a really important part, having key staff who are valued and have a high degree of kudos in the professional community here, having them involved as coaches, and they've over time become accredited coaches, and also encouraging observers. So in our particular process, a participant selects two observers and they work together over time and have conversations about practice. They don't coach one another per se, but they engage with one another and have conversations about what good practice means for them. And that's been really powerful as well.
What would you say your next phase will be? Where are you going to take it from here? Or what would you like to see happen?
At the moment, we've spent a bit of time putting the model online, which will mean that it'll be a lot easier for people to access. They can access it on their mobile phones or their iPads or whatever. That'll be an important next step in terms of making it accessible to people to be able to put their thoughts down at any given time. We continue to develop the model, and at the moment we've got the support of staff, and staff see that as a valuable contribution to their development. In our particular model, in terms of coaching and formative reviews, the line manager doesn't have a role, and we think that that's important, because as soon as a line manager does have a role, that becomes evaluative rather than a growth platform. So we're intending to continue to develop it, refine it, look at the working parts, and hopefully over the next 18 months to 2 years, just tweak aspects of it to make it even more user-friendly.
The fact that we're having this conversation means you are quite a champion for the GCI model. Why would you say you are such a believer in all of this, Richard?
That's a really good question. The challenge for schools, I think, is that we've moved from, in the 1950s, it was a really reasonably simple organisational structures and processes and dynamics, and then it got complicated, and now it's got highly complex, even to some degree chaotic. Everybody has an opinion about schools, and I think there's a degree of fatigue for staff about ongoing change, whether it be from the federal government or the state government, or one group or another, it always wants to add their little bit about what's in the best interests of students and education in Australia. In order for staff and schools to be able to manage and grow within complex environments, they need to be really highly connected. And coaching is a platform that enables people to connect deeply with one another, to talk about practice, and to be able to rely on one another's opinions when challenged with really complex issues. And schools, you don't get many organisations that are as complex as schools, because of the unique issues around teenage development and parenting, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. So I think that's a really, really important aspect. Coaching enables a platform of connection. Coaching enables a platform for trust and development, and coaching enables a platform for growth within those complex environments.
I love hearing these stories in the case study series and the difference it's making across the board at so many levels. Richard, thank you so much indeed for your time, and onward and upward.
Thank you very much. See you. Bye.
You've been listening to the Growth Coaching International Case Study podcast series. I'm Lee Hatcher. Check out some of our other great podcasts in this series. I know you'll be inspired. They are at www.growthcoaching.com.au.